is Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
So we've been just playing you some sounds, some sights and sounds from the last 24 hours here in Minneapolis. Murray played a cut during the break. If you missed it on NBC Sports Boston, Jimmy Stewart, if we could cue it up here. I don't know if you fired it from here.
No, Jimmy
Murray,
didn't.
But the thing about the gloves, so Tom Brady is at the podium again today wearing gloves on both hands.
Yeah, and he changed his glove. It's a new Under Armour glove.
Well, so this is, let's let the people hear it from Tom himself. Here's Brady on his hand.
It's getting better. I mean, it's not quite where I want to be, so I'm just trying to protect it the best way I can. It's obviously a very important part of my body for a quarterback, so I just want it to be as healthy as possible for the game on Sunday. So it's Under Armour just made it for me. It's a great glove. It's got a lot of recovery in it, and that's what I need this time.
That had Maz shaking his head.
Well, again, it's like everything is a pitch. So it just, and it's fine. I mean, you know, he was wearing the Under Armour gloves last week, the red ones. And, you know, you say, well, there it is, the one with the splint on it when he was on the field. And you could clearly see it, an Under Armour logo on it. And they were loving every minute of it. Now he's doing it at the podium during Super Bowl week. And so it's just, I don't know, you know, it's the commercialization of Tom Brady. It's everywhere. Facebook, Under Armour, it's like you're getting hit over the head with it, which, again, at the end of the day, is fine.
Didn't we used to just rip the crap out of Peyton Manning?
Sure.
The same stuff, though?
Yeah, sure. And again, look, I'd rather, in some ways, you look at it and say, okay, at least you're pitching a product. You know, I'm amused by the line, there's a lot of recovery in it.
That's the one that stood out to me.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, what do they got in there? They got little suction cups that are sucking blood in and out of his hands and getting blood flow in there, or
like,
what?
Like, what's that even mean?
If you want to tell me it's
got, you know, really good compression technology, you want to really sell it, then be salesy. But don't, that's like, it's magic. It's a magic, that's essentially, that's what that sounds like. It's a magic glove. My hand's all better.
It is. It's comical. So, and honestly, what, I don't even think we should be talking about the hand anymore. You tell me. I mean, they took the stitches
out.
Of course it's a non-story. It was a non-story in the Jacksonville game. And, you know, effectively, to me anyway, it shouldn't have really impacted the game. It did a little bit, but not enough to affect the outcome. And I don't think I think it's going to be a zero in this game.
All right, we continue with your calls at 617-779-0985. We're full, as usual. But as people jump off, you jump on. That's how we go. Bill in Abington. What do you got, Bill?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Hey, I want to talk about Gronkowski, the hit on Gronkowski. I think I was glad to see Church get fined because I thought that that was headhunting. I thought that that was a real illegal hit. And I want to turn the tables a little bit and wonder if you guys thought that it might have been the Jaguars coaching involved in that hit a little bit. I mean, how else could they stop Gronkowski, really, but knock him out of the game? I mean, stranger things have happened.
I hear you,
and I just wanted to see what you thought about that.
Okay. I don't think it was as glaring as you do. I think if he wanted to avoid the head area, he could have. But really, it was more of a football play. That's, you know, that's the rule now, and so it was the right call because it was a headshot, and that's the rule, defenseless receiver and whatnot. So the flag is legit. And he might give him a little fine, I guess. I don't know what was the fine. I didn't see it.
$24,000 and change.
That's a lot.
It is.
That's probably too much because I thought that was more of a football play. And my whole life that was legal. And now in the last couple of years it's not.
See, I don't think he avoided it. I told you, did he target the head and line up to drill him? No. Did he avoid the head? No.
No, he didn't.
So that's the way I look at it, is that he didn't go out of his way to make sure he hit him in the chest. And the thing that sealed it for me was the celebration afterward with the teammates. You know, it was caught on camera. And it was high-fiving, and I think they were all saying, that's it, you got him, you knocked him out, good job.
Bad look.
I think that that's exactly what that was. I don't think it was, hey, you knocked the ball out, good job on the incompletion. It was, nope, you knocked him out of the game.
Well, and he went back to sort of stand over him, too, you know? So, yeah, so he deserves it, but again, like, I just don't look at that play and say that that was a specific target to take someone out of the game. It was a bang-bang play.
I thought it was filthy at the time, but upon looking at it again, if I'm being objectively, he leads shoulder, and then the helmets connect. And even from a strategic standpoint, if the player was told to do that, or we're going to try to knock Gronk out, it's smart. It is. Just to take the fine and take the flag, you know, it knocked him out of the game. It could have helped him win the damn thing.
I mean, I know it's your guy, but at some point it is football. So, I don't know. If your guy got rung up for making a tackle like that, would I hear from you like that? Or would you be saying, oh, the wussification of America, put skirts on them. When are they going to wear flags out there? You know, like, if that were your guy, I have a feeling that's what you'd be saying. Joey in Nashua. Go ahead, Joey.
Yes. There is no reason why those defensive backs can't wrap up.
Who thinks they can get on the radio and say that?
No idea, but that was blatant.
Like, how do you even...
No, that wasn't even accidental.
And
like,
there it
I
is.
I mean, that was deliberate. That was blatant. That was 15 automatic ejection.
Good God.
Now the calls have taken a turn for Tuesday.
Here we go. To say, no. I still have faith in the people. We have a Pat in Walpole. Hi, Pat.
I'll try to kill that guy.
My faith was unfounded because your phone blows.
Comment line is good, too.
Mass is an idiot is what he said.
Yep, that's he wanted to know why, and I was going to suggest that there's not one reason. That's a long conversation.
Well, so let me. What makes you think the Eagles can beat the Patriots, Matt? Don't you know it's Doug Peterson and Nick Foles? You're just saying that? Are you just trolling?
Yeah, now he sounds like you.
No.
Doug Peterson. Look, I told you, I look at it this simply, okay, and I recognize the Foles problem, and it's a problem. But I think Philadelphia's roster is more I think their team is more balanced, and I think their roster is deeper. And so that's why I'm picking the Eagles.
And when you say they're more balanced, I want you to define that further.
I think they can run. I think they can throw. I think they have talent on levels of the defense. Do they have as much talent defensively as Jacksonville did? No. But I think there is talent throughout that defense. I don't think it's just four defensive linemen and seven bums. So, now look, I think the kicker's pretty good. Their special teams, from some of the stuff I was looking up earlier, their kick coverage is not great. But it feels like the kicker's got a big leg. He had a 62-yarder early in the year.
He's missed some extra points.
He has. Yep, he has, Mario. No question about it. But offensively and defensively, and maybe I'm overlooking special teams, I feel like it's a very balanced, even team that is hard to game plan for. And to me, that's a big factor. And I look at the Patriots and I say they're great at exploiting weaknesses. And I'm sure there are weaknesses there that many of us don't see that Belichick does. But I don't see a ton of holes on that Philly team. I don't.
So you got Eagles and the over.
The Eagles and the over. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game.
Arthur in Baldwinville. Hi, Arthur.
How you doing?
Good, man. What do you got?
Who do you think the next offensive coordinator is going to be in New England if they're going to promote within?
Yeah, Chad O'Shea is the receivers coach. Beadle and Zoe had him on in the midday this afternoon. I actually recommend you go listen to the interview on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app or online, Arthur, because, I don't know, he sounds like a pretty sharp guy, but it's Chad O'Shea, the receivers coach.
Do you think he'll be involved in the game this weekend?
Not really. I don't. I mean, I'm sure he has input, and I'm not even sure how involved he's going to be next year. I say he's the next guy. I think it's entirely possible he doesn't have the title. O'Brien was here 2 years before he got the title, right?
Or I think that's right. Patricia, at least a year.
Patricia did it for 2 years before he got the title. Would you be surprised if no one has the title of coordinator next year? There's no there's no offensive coordinator, there's no defensive coordinator?
No, I wouldn't be surprised in the least bit.
No, I think Flores is it will be the defensive coordinator. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't get the title. I think he will. You know, when he was in line to be a head coach in Arizona. He almost got that. So, I think it'd be... I don't know, a little weird if he came back and isn't even a coordinator. So I just based on that sort of body language, I would expect him to be a coordinator. Offensively, I'd be surprised if they go with no coordinator. It's just, you know, they've done it in the past.
Felger and Maz. The Sports Hub. Felger and Maz are on your phone with the radio.com app.
Get off the internet!
From 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Hey, you guys want to get a water ice? I don't know if I'm in the mood for a hoagie or a whiz wit.
E-A-G-L-E-S, Eagles!
Live from Radio Row, Felger and Maz present the Philadelphian of the Day.
All right, we continue to get our voices in from Philadelphia. Join us now in the Big Y World Class Market. Guest chair is Bob Ford. He writes for the Philadelphia Inquirer, covering the Eagles here this week in Minneapolis. Bob, thanks for joining us. How are you?
Great. Good to be here with you fellas in retail prison where you guys are. This is nice. They never let us leave.
Special.
It's a little less than special. Either way, tell me about your impressions of this week. How do you like your chances of your football team?
The hardest thing about winning the Super Bowl is getting in the damn thing, and the Eagles are good proof of that. And they're here by happenstance, but you know that's how everybody gets here. I mean, they played the Atlanta Falcons 2 weeks ago, and they've got first and goal at the 9 with Matt Ryan and Julio Jones, and Steve Sarkisian couldn't figure out a way to get the winning touchdown in the last minute of the game. And then the crazy thing happens up here where Minnesota pulls out the game against New Orleans, And I think New Orleans and Drew Brees would have been a much, much harder matchup for the Eagles in the NFC Championship game. So those things are just happenstance. And now that they're here, they have a puncher's chance.
Do you think they have a puncher's chance?
I do.
How so? How do they win the game?
Well, the more points thing will really help them. Yeah. I think, honestly, that New England's defense may be a little bit susceptible. You know, obviously Gronk's ability to play or not play is going to play into things.
Oh, but he's playing.
He'll play for sure.
That, I think that's probably what they're figuring, too. But you don't go, you know, 13-3 with mirrors. I mean, they're a decent team. I mean, are the Patriots unbeatable? I don't think so. So, yeah, it can happen.
Does Peterson have a clue, Bub? No, I mean that really. Like, you know, we've been discussing this all week, and this is Mike's point. I think nobody matches up with Belichick, and now you're talking about a guy who's been a head coach for 2 years.
Yeah, and, you know, when the Eagles hired him, and this is after 3 years of Chip Kelly, who was the smartest guy in the room and would tell you that every day on the hour, I think they wanted just something a little bit more comfortable to be running the organization on the field. And so they put on like an old flannel shirt. You know, they brought Andy Reid back, you know, as a younger Andy Reid and maybe just sort of a clone. And everybody was wondering whether or not he had ideas of his own or could lead on his own or could be a head coach at that level. Well, it's amazing when you win how much smarter you get. So Doug looks a lot better at 13-3 than he did at 7-9. He must have been staying up late studying or something, right?
But is he better? I mean, is he the same guy that a lot of people wanted fired after last year? Or is he actually improved or evolved?
Well, I think, honestly, with their offense, he got better players this year. The skill players last year were not very skilled. You know, they bring in Torrey Smith, they bring in Alshon Jeffrey, they bring in LeGarrette Blount. They go out in the middle this year and get Jay Ajayi. You know, they've helped out that offense. And then you also had the second year of Carson Wentz, a rookie year with even as good as a quarterback as I think he is or is going to be. A rookie year is a rookie year for a quarterback. And so that wasn't as good. And this year there was a marked improvement. So I think Doug got better because the players that he had to work with got better. The job he did when Wentz went down in Los Angeles and tore up his knee and he had to pivot to Nick Foles was pretty impressive. I mean, they had to throw out a whole bunch of their offense that was tailored to Carson Wentz and put in a lot of stuff that was tailored to Nick Foles. That's not easy to do in the middle of December and then get yourself back up for a playoff run. So I thought that was impressive.
So I'll grant you what he's done over the course of the season. Stands for itself. How is he in-game? How is he in-game against the clock? How is he in-game with his timeouts? How is he in-game with adjustments? What's his command there?
Much better than Andy Reid's was. And, you know, that was one of the knocks on Andy was that, you know, he wasted his timeouts. He wasted his challenges.
Brutal. To this day, he still does it.
Well, right. And obviously the ultimate was the Super Bowl against the Patriots in the 2004 season when the two-minute drill took 6 minutes. And we're still trying to figure out how that happened. I mean, I figured Belichick had to be running the clock. Right? I
mean, here we go.
He's just, you know, keep it going, guys. So, you know, Andy was not good at that. So you wondered, okay, if this is Andy's clone, is that going to be part of his repertoire as well? But it hasn't been. He hasn't wasted timeouts. He does not use his challenges poorly, and he seems to think on his feet pretty well. He calls the plays, and listen, wins make you smart, and so right now they're smart.
So when you say that the Eagles have a puncher's chance, who are you picking?
Well, I would be broke years and years ago if I bet on this stuff. What's the line right now?
It's down to 4.
Okay, I'll tell you what, take that out of it, who you like to win the game.
Well, no, it started at 5.5. It's okay to look at it with the spread as well.
Okay, and once Gronk is cleared, where's it going to go?
Maybe back up a little bit, but I think Vegas already assumes he's playing.
Gronk's going to be cleared.
Everyone assumes he's playing, I think, Bob.
Okay. All right, let's say it's a 4-point game. If you put a gun to my head and said you really have to pick a team, I would pick the New England Patriots. How can you not? I mean, that's a pedigree that you just can't ignore as opposed to a team that you say, okay, are they just happy to be here? This is their first bite of the apple. They got Nick Foles, by the way. So, no, I would probably pick the New England Patriots. But let me put it this way, what I mean by puncher's chance. I think if they played this game 10 times, the Patriots would win 8. And the question is, on Sunday, is this one of those other two?
Bob Ford, again, covers the Eagles here at the Super Bowl for the Philadelphia Inquirer. What can we expect from your people? What do you mean by that?
you mean the journalists here?
No.
We're going to stay up late and eat a lot.
Eagles fans. I think we're sort of all bracing for the zombie apocalypse.
You know, honestly, and I've been in this business for a while, and I've traveled to a lot of different towns, and I've always found that Boston and Philadelphia are very, very similar towns, both in terms of fans and in terms of the passion and in terms of sort of having a little bit of a smart-ass attitude and, you know, that kind of stuff.
We're educated, though.
I would tell you that there's more college students in the Philadelphia metropolitan area than the Boston metropolitan area, and I would be accurate, by the way.
Is that true?
Yes,
absolutely. But we have good schools. That's the difference. But go ahead.
Well, I'll have to drop by Penn and tell them how bad they are one of these days. You know, honestly, I don't think you're going to see anything untoward. And
do they need to stable the horses or, you know, because, again, the –
Well, first of all, they're going to be staying inside here. I mean,
that's what scares me.
That's right.
There's not going to be anybody running around outside. You know, that's,
no, but we're all trapped inside with them.
That's the only thing that surprised me about the stuff that happened after the game, after the Minnesota game, was that they were throwing full beer cans. And normally they just crush them up after having consumed them and then toss them. And they're amazingly accurate even under those circumstances. But the fact that they were throwing full beer cans, I think, just tells you the level of jubilation they had for people who were smart enough to come down to Philadelphia wearing their purple jerseys and things like that.
Bob Ford, I'm with the Philadelphia Inquirer. I have some Eagles calls on the board, Bob, so why don't you help us out since they're going to be about the Eagles. Peter in Jamaica Plain. Go ahead. What do you got? Peter!
Who let the dogs out,
That's
Peter?
That's the underdog. Here's Steve in Marble. Go ahead, Steve.
I think that guy hit everything. He hit the nail on the head in everything. I think Patriots fans, I grew up, I still live in Boston, but I grew up in Boston. People forget how Red Sox fans were before they won the World Series. The people that got arrested. I was down at Fenway when they were lighting Yankee flags on fire on top of the billboard after they beat the Angels. So to call silly fans nuts, could you picture what Patriots fans would be if they hadn't won a Super Bowl until now? They'd be absolutely berserk.
They wouldn't be as violent as the Philly fan, Bob. That's what I've always said. I've covered every team in every stadium in the league. I've been all over the league, covered the league for 10 years, so I've been at every stadium, interacted with every fan base.
You've visited the Oakland Raiders fan base, have you?
Yeah, I have. Yep.
Where every day is Halloween.
Yes, correct. And the only time I felt like I was going to hit over the back of the head with a metal chair was Philadelphia, both at the old Vet Stadium, Super Bowl in the Super Bowl in Jacksonville in 2004. There's just that undercurrent of violence with the Philly fan that I experienced nowhere else.
Well, you know, the Eagles won their last NFL championship in the final month of the Eisenhower administration. So maybe you should give these people just a little bit of a break, huh?
No, I give them no pass at all. And it's true about Red Sox fans, although I don't know if they were violent. They whined a lot, but I don't know if they were violent.
Chris in Kansas City, go.
Hey, guys. Simple question. What I don't get is if you had told me before the season started that you're going to be picking the Eagles over the Pats in the Super Bowl when they have a backup QB going, I'd lose my mind. And you've got the GOAT at your QB, and you have the GOAT as your head coach. What are you afraid of? What are you worried about?
Okay, so, Bob, I'm sorry to cut you off. Bob, how does Nick Foles win you this game?
Did one of you guys pick the Eagles?
I did.
Holy moly. How does Nick win this game? Exactly the same way that they won the NFC Championship game and the Atlanta game, the divisional game. They dumbed down the offense a little bit. And when I say dumbed down the offense, they really do that thing where play-action passes have to work, and the little slants have to work, and the little pop things to the tight end. Zach Ertz is going to be really important in this game. The slot receiver, Nelson Aguilar, is going to be very important in this game. I don't think the outside guys, Alshon Jeffrey and Torrey Smith, are going to be that important because I don't think Nick Foles – I don't think they're going to budget for Nick Foles to have that much time to let the guy get downfield. Carson Wentz could buy time that this guy can't. So it's going to be that short pop, 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 and can they build 12 to 14 play drives to score? That is, you know, that's going to be the challenge for the Patriots defense. Get them off the field.
Is the Philly defense for real?
I think they're pretty good. I think they're playing better than they are, to be honest with you, better than the sum of their parts, if you know what I mean. They have a unicorn in Fletcher Cox because, you know, most rush defenses are, you know, build that umbrella. They've got that push in the middle. So when Brady, who loves to step up into the pocket and get sort of in that cocoon ain't there with Fletcher Cox because he's coming up the middle and he's making a dent in it. So he changes things a lot. Their pressure is very, very good, and it makes them make up for some of the deficiencies that they might have on the back end.
Okay, again, Bob Ford, read him in the Philadelphia Inquirer. Thanks for coming by, Bob. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure, fellas.
Okay,
see you, Bob.
Have a good week. Here's an update from Murray. Our coverage continues this hour, presented by Whole Foods Market.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I like football, and I like the Patriots and all of that.
Hold on, I'm not done.
This is Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, we're right here with Philadelphia legend Howard Eskin, who's been just full of verbs and accusations and nouns and all kinds of lies and slander. Howard, what's the matter with you?
Cheaters. I mean, listen, I like truth, justice, and the American way. And the Patriots, over years, have cheated. Now, they've been good, but they've cheated. So I'm just giving you the truth, because I want justice.
I understand that. And I ask you, how in God's name were the Patriots able to stick their fingers down the throat of Donovan McNabb in 2004 to make him vomit on his shoes during one of the closing drives? Because that is the height of underhandedness.
He had bad breakfast. He had a bad breakfast.
They slipped him a bad egg.
Yeah, they slipped him a bad egg.
The cheating accusations have come up, as they do every year at the Super Bowl when the Patriots are in it. And it usually comes early. And we've discussed this. This is very good for you. I think it really takes time and energy away from the opponent and occupies and fills their heads with things that aren't going to help them win the football game. So I think it benefits you. But I've also asked a side question, and that is, how unfair is it? That's Howard Eskin, longtime Philadelphia radio guy. I'm with Tom Kern on NBC Sports Boston. But that's just a media guy slinging that stuff. There are a couple football guys who did it as well this week. And I'll play the two cuts of sound that we've been hearing. This is Steve Spagnuolo first. Steve Spagnuolo, you know, as being the defensive coordinator for the Giants, who had that game plan that beat you in the 2007 Super Bowl. He was an assistant coach for the Philadelphia Eagles in 2004 when the Eagles lost to the Patriots in Jacksonville. So he was on the Philadelphia staff for that game. And he's going to tell a story about doing the game and calling the game with Jim Johnson, the defensive coordinator at the time, where they thought the Patriots had the Eagles' signals. This is, Steve Spagnuolo on the Fanatic in Philadelphia last night.
You learned a lot by being against them in 04 during the Super Bowl, the last Super Bowl we were in, when you were working with Jim Johnson.
Yeah.
So you learned a lot from them in that game, too.
No question. I tell you, the biggest thing we learned was make sure you have two signal callers, not one signal caller, because they may have all your signals.
Yeah, well, look, Spygate's real now. I mean, that was a real deal. And you guys saw, I keep going back to that Super Bowl. I watched it again, and man, that third quarter.
You're talking about the Eagles, yeah. Patriots, yeah. Well, look, here's what I remember distinctly. Now, at the time, I was up in the box, and Jim was down on the field. And I remember through the course of the game, Jim saying, they're getting our signals. They know when we're blitzing. They're getting our signals. You know, try to hide it, et cetera, et cetera. And I remember distinctly thinking, Jim, I don't think that's true. Now, I'm not saying this to him because I don't want to upset him, but I'm saying to myself, I don't think so, Jim. Just concentrate on, you know, calling the game. But he, you know what, in hindsight, he was right. When you go back and look at that tape, it was evident to us. And I'm not crying over spilt milk here, but we believe that Tom knew when we were pressuring, because he certainly got the ball out pretty quick. But, you know, you got to play the game, and they won that particular day. But there's no question, I wasn't going to let that happen in the 08 Super Bowl after the 07 season. We made sure we had two signal calls, and we were protecting against that. So
yeah,
that was good knowledge.
Okay, so Steve Spagnuolo last night in Philadelphia, also last night in Boston, if you will. It was on NBC Sports Boston. I was on set with Barrett Brooks, or Brooks Barrett, one of those two, former offensive lineman for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Okay, Barrett now works in Philadelphia for NBC Sports Philadelphia, but he was a Steeler in 2004. He played the Patriots the week before the Eagles in the 2004 AFC Championship game in Pittsburgh. On TV with us last night, he said the Patriots had the Steelers plays in that game. Go ahead, Jimmy.
I can remember being in the huddle, and Teddy Bruschi, we called on the play that I didn't even know yet.
Oh, well, here we go.
Fox 2 run, that's a draw play. He's saying, hey, draw right here, draw right here. And then,
had you guys lined up yet?
No, we weren't out the huddle. Come on, we weren't out the huddle. And he knows the play before I do, and we ran Fox 2 run. I'm looking at Ben, you got to change that. But he was a rookie. He didn't know any better. He just won 15 games in a row. I mean, he was a great player then.
So you think the Patriots had your playbook that week?
They knew something I didn't know. They knew how to cheat better than we did. I can't be mad because they cheated better than us.
Do you really believe they cheat? I mean, seriously, if you busted our chops, you really believe it?
No, it's not a belief. I saw it. I witnessed it.
How did they cheat then?
Let me tell you, personnel package is like 12 personnel. One running back, two tight ends. If they're calling 12 personnel before we get on the field, something has got to be going on.
But how do they do it?
Maybe they have something. They're tapped into the headset.
Well,
Well, I mean, they were tapping in something, you know, practice and everything else.
That was Scott Zolak was in Mike Tomlin's ear opening night. But I mean, that would be the only way. I mean, is if they're picking up the radio communications.
Or you picking up signals, you know what I mean, from our guys. I mean, there's all things. Like I said, I can just be mad, but you guys have ring.
Okay, so two accusations going back 14 years. Is it fair for that to be brought up this week?
Sure. Yeah, look, when you get to this game, your entire career is on trial. I mean, and so everything you've done comes up at some point, and so the good and the bad. And so, sure, it's fair. Now, look, do I think it's the reason, ultimately, that the Patriots have won? No, I don't. As I've said a million times, you go across America and ask anybody who the best coach in football is, everyone says Bill Belichick, independent of all the scandals. And you ask anyone who the best quarterback is, and they'll all say Tom Brady. So, or a large percentage of them anyway. So I think people do get past it. But what I find interesting is, and I add in the story that was in the Ringer today, or on the Ringer today, concerning the number of penalties called on other teams versus the Patriots in the playoffs, and the idea that there is a quote-unquote conspiracy. I look at that and I laugh. Like, really? So the league is going to punish the Patriots on one hand and help them on another one? No way. No, like, but they're all done with the same motive? Like, that tells me people are absolutely positively mental about the Patriots. They can't get them out of their heads. The Patriots have totally consumed their being, you know, the entire football world, and I attribute that almost 100% to Belichick. To me, that's Bill, and that's Bill's methods and Bill's smarts, and I think people just cannot get past it.
And this kind of success, 18 years of success like this, it's not supposed to happen in the league. It's not built for this. It's not supposed to happen, so it makes everybody crazy. And okay, you know, the perception is people's reality that they're cheaters and they got nabbed for a couple of things, so fine. As a fan, I can live with that. But one particular quote from Spagnuolo in that audio you played, yeah, Brady was getting the ball out quick, so he knew our calls. No, the Patriots' offense is predicated on Brady getting the ball out quick, especially back then, numbnuts. They dink and dunk you to death. So
see, I'm with Murray on that, too. Like, that comment is just because he get the ball out fast, they knew the signals?
Please.
Now, look, maybe they did know the signals. I mean, I don't put that past them. Of course.
Switch it up.
But even so, to you know, the two aren't directly connected like he thinks they are. Well, what do you think? Is it fair to bring it up?
It's absolutely fair to bring it up. Absolutely fair. You were doing it. You were taping signals. You were getting signals. You were using it. When the league told you to stop, you kept doing it. And I believe Barrett, and I believe Spagnuolo. But I also believe when you say to me, well, Brady gets the ball out quick anyway. Or the preparation probably would have had that blitz diagnosed anyway. Or Brady's great against the blitz anyway. Or the Eagles were easy to figure out because they were running the same stuff. I think it's all true. I think it's all true. The only point that I guess I would, you know, break with most Patriots fans is that it's sort of unfair to bring up, and it's no, you were doing it. You probably did have the Eagle signals.
See, to me, this is,
and you probably did have the Steelers signals. This was 04. Both those accounts come from 04, which is the heart of, I mean, if you will, the Spygate taping era. You weren't caught till the first week of 2007. So everything up to 2007, you were doing, and you had it, and. You know, I don't think it was a zero factor. I think it helps you out a little bit.
See, to me, Patriots fans get frustrated, by, which I understand. But I would also say, well, this is why it was so damaging, right? Belichick has admitted that they got caught for it. He said we were wrong, and we got penalized for it, and that was it. Right? I mean, there was like a tacit defense of it, too, at the time. If you remember, 75,000 people in the stadium, everybody's watching the signs like we are.
How could I forget?
But we got caught, he said, right? But we got caught. We got penalized for it. We move on. But at least there was some admission and acknowledgement on his part that, yep, they were doing it. And to me, it just amplifies how dumb that was. Again, how dumb was it to have something like that come out? And first of all, the fact that you did it, eventually someone found out about it, and that taints on some level, however small, taints what you accomplished.
So does it aggravate you, Patriots fans, to have to hear that? Is it unfair to have to hear it? And then there's a whole side piece that I think it benefits you. And as Maz said, again, tied in with the official stuff. And the Ringer had a story, and others have noticed this, that the Patriots have gotten a good run with the officials here, a real good run with the officials this year, and really going back through last year's Super Bowl against Atlanta. But just so far in the playoffs, the Pats have lost 47 yards on 5 penalties, 4 of which were special teams penalties. So they've been penalized once on offense or defense in these two playoff games where their two opponents have been flagged 16 times for a buck 60. The Pats have also had disputed touchdowns go in their favor in games against the Jets, games against the Bills, games against the Steelers, and etc. And so there's a whole story in the Ringer about this, and the league even sent something out about the disparity in penalties last week. And so my take on that is that going to even out? You know, it's been a while since you've been truly porked by the officials. It's been a while. I mean, I would even go back to the last time I thought you really got hosed by the officials was that road game in Denver.
2015 in Denver,
in 2015, there was a really bad PI on you in the end zone, and there were a couple of things in that game that were just ridiculous. That was a loss in Denver where the kid dropped the punt. But anyway, you really got hosed by the officials in that game. I feel since then you've had a pretty good run of it. And again, there's more stats on you in the playoffs the last couple of years, your penalties versus the opponents, and on and on and on. Does that even out in this game? Or does that speak to a bigger conspiracy theory, as others want to put out there? But again, that just plays to the fact that you are in everybody's head, man.
So to me, I don't believe the conspiracy thing, but I can totally see the league communicating with the officials and saying, hey, look, rightly or wrongly, there's a discrepancy here that people are focused on. Let's just make sure we call it as even as possible, depending on what happens.
Felger and Maz. Felger and Maz.
To your ears.
Blunt force trauma!
We're gonna run it right down their throat!
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
You think the Patriots had your playbook that week?
They knew something I didn't know. They knew how to cheat better than we did. I can't be mad because they cheated better than us. I just
you really believe they cheat? I mean, seriously, if you busted our chops, so you really believe it?
No, it's not a belief. I saw it. I witnessed it.
How did they cheat then?
Let me tell you, personnel package is like 12 personnel. One running back, two tight ends. If they're calling 12 personnel before we get on the field, something has got to be going on.
But in terms of the Patriots, if they still think you're out there running around with cameras and whatnot, pins in the football and all of that, that's nothing but good for you.
See, to me, this is the real, and again, look, you have more intimate knowledge of it than I do, but to me, this is where Belichick really, he's the master of psychological warfare. I think he's the master of it, and he's got, so half the time, these teams end up fighting themselves instead of fighting the Patriots.
Okay, that's one of the items on the board. We'll talk about whatever you want with your calls here. We don't have a commercial for about 20 minutes, so it's a great time to stick around or give us a call. As Pat in Walpole has. Pat wants to talk to Maz. Go ahead, Pat.
How are we doing, guys? I just wanted to give you a call. I think your take on the Patriots losing a high-scoring game is totally insane and goes against pretty much everything that's happened in the Bill Belichick era. Just wanted to give you some numbers just so you know. They've played 26 games in the playoffs where they've scored more than 20 points, 20 points or more. In those 26 games, they are 24-2. The two losses being the Jets game in 2010 where they scored a garbage-time touchdown with less than 30 seconds left to score 21, and then the 06 AFC Championship game. They get over 20. They're not losing. They haven't lost since that game in 2010. I don't think they lose over 20. The only way they lose is if they get kept under 20 by the Eagles' defense.
So, look, he's right. There's an inconsistency there. I mean, totally. That typically the teams that have beaten the Patriots have done so by mitigating and limiting Brady. And maybe Philadelphia is going to take a very traditional approach to this game, slow the game down the way the Giants did in 2011, run the ball, try to keep Brady off the field. And this is a Philadelphia team that I think led the league in time of possession this year. So maybe it will be that way. And look, I'm not telling you I'm going to be right on both of them, okay? I tell you, if you ask me to pick one or the other, my stronger feelings about the over. I think that's the safest bet. But I think Philly's better than people give him credit for. I think Peterson's a good offensive coach and play caller, and they're going to find a way to mitigate Foles.
Our buddy Matt is in Framingham. Hi, Matthew.
Tone and Matt are worried. Sounds like you just backed off your Eagles pick right there.
So, I didn't back off anything. Hold on.
We went from Big Jim worried to Tony
Tony Mazza Worry.
I'm sorry, Matthew. What's his nickname again?
Mad and Worried.
Oh, Tony Mad and Worried. Got
I like
it.
Mazza Worry better.
But I hope I didn't come off harsh yesterday, buddy. I just, you never said that Brady is over, but your two takes did. When you say he's going to lose this game and that you felt like this was the bookend of the dynasty, you put those two together, that means Brady's going down.
So Matt,
I came to that conclusion on my own.
So what I said was, if you were to look at the elements leading up to this game, I can understand why people would feel the end is coming. I can totally understand that.
All right. And so I put those two together and came to that.
Yeah. So I just don't like being accused of saying things I didn't say.
Of course.
That team of the Patriots.
You're forgiven.
I'm sorry that I feel that way. I know that people find that offensive, that the other team actually has good players. I know that pisses people off. I know. I apologize. I'm sorry.
You will be sorry on Sunday night when it's 42-10.
And next week, I'm sure you'll shove it down my throat when the Patriots win big.
We look forward
to it. It's fine. It's okay. I accepted that reality of this business a long time ago.
Matthew, is there anything else?
Yeah, well, Tony, that's why I called, just to justify. But anyways, yes, I have a take. So every single Super Bowl, I said this on Gasser and Murray, and they agreed. Every single Super Bowl with the Patriots, the last seven, have all come down to the last play. I would even go as far to say, if you take the top 10 most excitable endings of Super Bowls, the pass would be in five of them. So I ask myself why. And the reason I think is that when a team has an extra week to prepare for Belichick, it benefits them. Because if you only have 1 week, Belichick, he has a system where he's gonna be prepared more than you. However,
so Matthew, just let me,
Bowl,
so Matthew,
on this
are you expecting
Bowl with Gronk, if I could just say, with Gronk being injured, it actually benefits us for the first time. I would say the extra week of rest.
Okay, it does benefit you that you get him back, and I'm sorry, I just have to let you go. Could it be another close game? Yes, I've been saying this all week. You know, again, I have a fear that it's going to be a blowout, and I wouldn't be surprised one bit if there were a blowout. And frankly, if it wasn't for that Jaguars game last week, I would call for a blowout. But fine, the Eagles are going to give you a game. Fine, they're not going to make the plays at the end to beat you. That's the one thing I just can't. As much as I would love to believe the Eagles could win this game, just for interest's sake, I can't bring myself to think it. I can't make myself believe they're going to out-execute and out-coach you in the last couple minutes of this ballgame.
So, look, I'm getting more interested in Fletcher Cox as this week goes along. The people that follow the Eagles, the people that follow that league, talk about him as this major disruptive force. He can handle double teams, all of it. I want to, Michael Bennett was a guy that the Patriots really had to plan for in that Super Bowl. Maybe they're doing the same thing now with Fletcher Cox. And Bennett was a monster. And so if this guy's the same kind of player, one guy like that can cause you a lot of problems.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.